Hi everyone, welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, I am elevating voices of diverse, authentic leaders who I think demonstrate the way of the leadership athlete. And this time around, we're also breaking down hot topics that are meant to help you take your game to the next level. So today's episode, I'm really excited about for a lot of reasons. It is a bonus episode in a three-part series that I've been doing with my Change Force colleague and friend, Bob Wiesner. So Bob, thank you so much for coming back to the show for the fourth one in a row.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Hope you're not sick of me yet.
Hardly, Shauna. Can't get enough of you.
So folks, Bob has over 30 years of experience. He's had incredible results with his clients. Billions of dollars of revenue have been realized. And, you know, he actually also really helps clients to have over 80% win rates, which if you know much or you're in the sales and business development side of things, that's pretty remarkable. So, and joining us today is Jennifer Brown, who is also a Change Force colleague of ours. She is the founder of Jennifer Brown Speaks, award-winning entrepreneur, which I will say congratulations. I saw you had a new nomination for an award just today. Yeah, you're doing amazing work. She's a diversity and inclusion consultant, speaker, author, many other things. So Jennifer, thank you so much for making the time, especially on a stormy power shutdown day.
I'm delighted. Thanks, Shauna.
Yeah, absolutely. So folks, today we are breaking down a topic that is not talked about enough. It is an unspoken element of business development that I find and my guests here today have agreed with me. It is DEI in business development. It is a hot topic, a necessary and important topic. So in that, we're going to cover kind of three areas: the importance of DEI in business development, and five key points that Jennifer has really laid out, which I think are going to be really helpful to you all as you carry on from this episode. We're going to talk about raising awareness and making improvements, and then we're going to close it out with some recommendations. The whole goal is for you as the audience to take some key learnings from this and put it into practice. So I would love to turn it over and to both of you and hear your thoughts respectively on the importance factor and the factor of the unspoken nature of DEI in business development. So I'll toss it to you first, Jennifer.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Shauna. And Bob, I'm looking forward to hearing your viewpoint as such a pro in the sales world, like what you've noticed about who's missing, what conversations are missing, and what you think is lost from your vantage point when we don't pay attention to this. I'd love to hear when it first came to your attention, because I know that it's important to you. And I know you believe it's an enabler of business and success and closing deals, but I wonder how you witness it kind of occurring and how you kind of intervene perhaps and guide, and what questions you might have about how to guide and you know, how to kind of construct the ideal, even though we know that's not possible all the time.
Well, I'll be happy to share that, Jennifer. But the but is that we'd love to hear first, as Shauna asked, about your observations. I have my points of view for sure. I'm sure they'll be aligned with yours. But I think the audience, since you're new to the podcast and are probably new to many people watching and or listening, probably want to hear your professional take on things. So I want to punt it back at you.
Punting. Good. Good. Good colleagueship. This is good. So thank you. And, you know, I'm really glad that we're paying attention to this. It is this invisible derailer, I think, of trust, which is, I think, an enabler of business deals and saying yes or saying no. And it is something that I think sales functions and teams are, like we talked about, not aware of, don't notice, and perhaps don't prepare to bring with them into the pitch meeting, into the relationship building. It doesn't occur to people. I find. And if a field, like so many fields, are dominated by one or two identities, which we know might be in the sales world, certainly in other worlds, might be more male dominated, might be more white identity dominated. It's something that there's a comfort level of the status quo. And there is, unless you actually are told by a client, look, we weren't satisfied with who you put in front of us. We don't think you knew our audience. You never spoke about DEI and how it might be important to you as a firm. And therefore, we are not giving you the business. It's part of what led us to not say yes. Unfortunately, we don't get that feedback very often. We don't get that postmortem. And I believe that, and there's not a lot of data on this because it's so confidential. That's the hard part of kind of establishing the connection between the one business or the lost business and who you brought to the table and who spoke at that meeting and what you actually shared beyond what you're actually pitching. All of that is kind of lost in the, oh, no, thank you. We're not going to go with you. And therefore, I think the learning can't happen after the fact to say, did we really do a good job of understanding how DEI is affecting them, how it is impacting their customers, how they are being held accountable by their customers and their partners and stakeholders for this, and how knowledgeable were we when we came in? Had we done our homework on that, and how did we talk about it or not? So it's a little bit of the who is there from an optics perspective, but it's also what we say and how we say it and what we choose to share. Because let's face it, business is not just about the transaction. It's not just about the solution. It's about how you make people feel that you are, in many ways, I think, ahead of them in terms of your thinking, so that you are actually leading them to understand something that they hadn't thought about or something that they're hoping that you're thinking about, because that's going to end up being the part of the basis for their decision. So anyway, that's, I think, what's happening. And we're in a vacuum. We don't know why or why not often, which means to me, though, we have to know, though, that it's going on. We have to know that somebody leaves a meeting with us and says, interesting. Like, who did they bring in to us? What did they not understand about our customers? What did they not understand about how it's diverse? Our world is diversifying in every way, gender-wise, race and ethnicity-wise, age, generation, the values that we need to really communicate to our clients and our customers. If none of that comes up without credibility and authority and confidence and preparation on the part of the sales team, I think, you know, these sales teams may be dismissed, and I don't want to see that. I think it's very avoidable. So hopefully we can talk about how to remedy that today.
I'm going to echo those points, and I'm going to build on them as well, Jennifer. They're very well stated. You know, the first time that I became aware of the importance of optics goes back well before. It goes back to days when DEI was just a misspelling of the word die. No one knew what diversity, equality, and inclusion actually meant. But there was a very clear sensitivity to optics. What does the team look like that's presenting to the client? Now, if you go back to the 50s and 60s, that probably wasn't that important because everybody looked alike. Everybody was, as you said, Jen, was white males. You know, both sides of the desk. Then things started to change. Now, not necessarily because of an embracing of diversity per se, but in certain professions like the creative areas, architecture, advertising, and so on, there was this idea that if we're going to be seen as somebody different, bringing different skills to the table than our client or prospect has, then we have to look different. So, you know, in the advertising business, it was the black t-shirts and the long ponytails sitting on one side of the desk. And these are men, by the way, across from, you know, clients in suits and ties. Now, that may have been actually preferred at one point, but much more recently, in the last 15, 20 years, and this is based on research that I've been part of since the mid 90s, the trend has moved more towards the need to look like the client. I don't mean identical, but we put it under the heading of chemistry. Hmm. How can you present a team who thinks like, talks like, is culturally aligned with the way the client is or aspires to be? And those sales teams of, you know, white guys is just not going to be perceived as being aligned with the client. Now, we can have a whole podcast about why that change occurred, so we won't go into the details today, but I'm very certain that it's a real thing now. You need to reflect back to the client that you think and you operate and your values, priorities are set in ways that are consistent with theirs. And that means, on a practical basis, that your team has to look like the kind of team that they want to be working with. So on the optics basis, that's, I think, extraordinarily important, and more so now than ever, and undervalued by too many pitch teams. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to add a second point to this. I want to build a little bit deeper. I learned also years ago that when you put teams together to tackle a problem, if everybody has the same background, then everybody's going to think the same way. And while you may be really happy that our solutions that we're individually thinking of are so closely aligned with each other, you're also limiting the variety, the range of solutions you could come up with. If your team is not diverse and you all have the same backgrounds and think the same way, then you're all going to orbit around the same planet. As soon as you can add in different backgrounds, different ways of thinking, different ways of processing, different life experiences, you as a pitch team now have access to a broader range of ideas. You can bring different ideas than you would otherwise have brought, and those ideas may be winners. That, and it's certainly going to be different than the ideas brought by your competitors, who are all a bunch of white guys. So the diversity works on both a kind of a pragmatic, physical basis, but it's also essential if you just want to get better thinking out of your pitch team.
Yeah, I love that you said that. And actually, that was one of my bosses, Matt Pizarris, who's been a dear friend of mine for a long time. He is a senior at the Milwaukee Bucks. I talked to him about this actually on the show one time, where he was saying exactly what you said, what you just said, Bob. And that was why, back when I did work for him, gosh, years ago now, the teams that he always built were diverse. I was a part of a diverse team, even though I was working for the Nets, which was, you know, male sport, professional sport was very much dominated by white males. But he said exactly what you did. So I really feel blessed that I had him in my journey, so that I was able to come up in that surrounding of authentically creating a team that had representation on it. And that was something, as you were both were speaking, I wrote down a couple of notes, is that the authentic part is so important, when, because it's the way the team in the room that's pitching looks, but there's also the unseen elements of diversity that need to be taken into consideration and represented, and, you know, in an appropriate way. There's also, you know, too many times it's not authentic, and it's like, who's the one person of color in the agency? I'm going to use agency just because I spent a lot of time at it. Who's the one person of color in the agency so I can bring into the pitch team? Now, what that does to the culture in the agency is not a good thing. The person feels like a token. They come in, then you're trying to pretend to the client or the potential client that this is how we operate, but it's not authentic. And as Bob, in our 13 truths of pitching, they know it's not authentic. So, you know, I just wanted to add those additional layers. You know, so again, it's got to be authentic. We need to consider who's in the room, but then who's on the team that's going to work on it, which I think Jennifer goes so much to. Does it make sense to that client that you're that this team is actually going to be the one that's going to carry that client forward. And it's got to make sense from, we get it, we understand it, we've done the research, we get it from your perspective in the seats of the client, but then also the consumer. So I just wanted to again, add those elements.
Jen, you've said it in our conversations many times that DEI is a journey, not a destination. And I think a lot of the teams, and this builds off of Shauna's point, they may be afraid to diversify because those people, I don't mean that any category, I'm not categorizing when I say that, but those people that are coming into the team that haven't been part of the team before, don't have the level of experience, don't have the level of comfort with the subject matter. Maybe they've never before seen the client. Yet, if it's a journey, then it has to be expected that we're going to be learning this together. We're not a finished product. And maybe that's not a negative when your team is interacting with your prospect.
I honestly think what you're talking about is tokenization. There's a word for what you described, I think, Shauna, that, or Bob, the one person that's always called to give the optics that you want to see. And everybody can see through that. And it's demoralizing for the person. And my answer to that always is, why is there only one person? And why is it this like last minute afterthought? Yeah. Why is it not something that's more of a discipline on the part of the company behind the sales team, honestly? Because by the way, this is not just up to the sales team. Correct. Ideally, a sales team refers back to the institution and the values and the commitments of the institution. So it shouldn't be done in a it could be done in a vacuum if the institution is not able or engaged on this topic at all. It could still be important to the people in the sales team to make a plan to say, how will we address the fact that we are bringing five white guys to this meeting? I actually think that it can be done because there's many invisible aspects of diversity as well. I really, when I teach diversity dimensions, I really try to go beyond the obvious ones because there are so, so many beyond what we say race and gender, which have been historically the focus. And those are, by the way, sometimes visible and observable and sometimes not. And sometimes people are hiding them. Right. You know, Jose wants to be called Joe in a meeting, you know, and doesn't at all see themselves as somebody that might qualify as diversity or ever even speak it in a meeting. So you've got people, what we call covering in organizations too, where they don't feel safe to even bring that out and they don't know why they would. And they're spending so much time conforming to the norm that it's inconceivable to even bring what they actually may bring from a wisdom perspective. I mean, imagine if you're pitching Disney and you look at the audience of that company, you want that team to be really reflective, not just optically, but there's invisible diversity dimensions, but there's also more than just, there's diversity and inclusion. Diversity is the who and the observable and the unobservable, but the inclusion is the how. And to me, Bob, I love your point. Both of you have said this, like no company is a finished product. No sales team is a finished product. We're all works in progress. And I think speaking about the journey that we're on as a company may really resonate. It may be enough. And honestly, I think it should be enough. Efforts count for a lot. More and more we're being asked to, when we come to a sales pitch, to justify what are your efforts going on? How do you look at our customers? How are they important to you? How are the demographics important to you? How do you know how to serve somebody's incredibly diverse demographic when you aren't diverse yourselves and you don't have a story and some kind of track record around DEI as a company? Those are the questions that are being asked because they're looking, as you talk about the match, they're looking for that alignment and that anticipation of their pain points. And you're right, Bob, the assumption, right or wrong, is if you see people of different identities, there is a knowledge there. There is a acknowledgement. There is a lived experience there that's going to help inform your serving that client, your being successful with that client. Now, that's a big assumption. You know, I think you know, everybody has work to do on inclusion, including some of us who are in traditionally marginalized identities too. So we're not like the savior of the situation necessarily either. But what I think I would love leaders to be acknowledging more openly is, and have a story to tell and be prepared. It doesn't need to be a finished story. It can be a progress story. It can be, these are our efforts. This is what we, even the art of this is to be able to walk in as mostly white guys and bring up, we've researched your customer base. We know this about them. We are coping with the same thing with our customers. We are seeing this dynamic in our workforce. Here's how we're handling it. How are you handling it? Every leader is also, you know, dealing with a lot right now internally in workplace dynamics and workplace cultures and the push and pull and the pressure that they're getting about their internal, the guts of the organization matching the customers they're serving. They're getting the same heat, I'm sure, because workforces are not anywhere near as diverse as the world that they serve. That is true for all. You can make that assumption. Any sales meeting you're in, that client on the other side is struggling with these things because there is a huge disconnect and a mismatch. And there's work happening. So I think if you can bring this to the table and into the conversation, and you have some kind of credibility and competence with that discussion, and you can back it up with some information, even to say, wow, we have really faced that challenge as well. Here's what we're doing about it. We would be happy to share some best practices or whatever we're working on if it would be helpful. And we would love to learn from you because we know that this is important. So there are ways to get off script and kind of begin to bond with them about this because every institution is on a journey. And it's a matter of just saying, I know, I hear you, we can imagine, and here's where we are. And maybe this is something, another level that we can collaborate on.
Yeah. I'm glad you spoke to it like that because as you did, it's talking about like transparently addressing it. And if it's authentic and it's transparent, then it doesn't have to be something that causes fear or is seen as a block. And, you know, I think it can just help everyone feel more comfortable at the table. And I've been in situations where it was a front. And like that, again, people see through that. I'm grateful to see brands who are actually demanding that of firms that they work with these days. They're saying this percentage of your workforce needs to have diversity. And I don't know the specifics of it, but we do see that as we talk to different firms. So I'm actually glad to see it. And the reason I say that is because it still is a world in which there are a lot of organizations where that change isn't happening and that change is not exactly valued. So some of it has to be, it's like an ecosystem where sometimes it has to be forced a bit. And the last thing I'll say is on this topic is I also really want to emphasize that it requires certain people who are in those seats, such as, you know, white women, to actually be a part of the change, be a part of if you happen, because as you said, if it's the organization isn't where it needs to be, if the pitch team isn't where it needs to be from a diversity and inclusion standpoint, then how do you speak up as a leader, as a part of that team, and be a part of that change? Because if you're not, then you're a part of the problem. And at the risk of embarrassing Bob, I will say Bob's been one of the few like white men who have been in pitch team type situations with me where he actually spoke up to the group and said, hey, you know what? Like, actually, I'm putting Shauna forward instead of myself because this is what needs to happen for this moment. And, you know, again, it takes people that are willing to do that, to put somebody else forward instead of themselves, because it's what is needed. You know, again, for the optics, for the relationship, for change to come forward.
It requires, and by the way, thank you for the kind words. Making that kind of an adjustment, to be willing to put a more diverse team together, oftentimes requires a shift in your competitive mindset. To the extent that we all want to win, that's why we're doing what we do. But it requires you to realize that there are multiple ways of winning. And although if I put I'll use you, Shauna, as an example. If I put Shauna on my team, she might not have the same answers to questions that I would have, or she might not go about analyzing the client's problem the same way I would. But rather than me saying, well, therefore, Shauna has less value, and I could do a better job and therefore will win more, what I'm thinking instead is, let's hear what she has to say, because she's going to come up with something that I would not come up with. I'm certain of that. And it's not an, it won't be an or Bob or Shauna. It'll be Bob and Shauna. Together, we will have better solutions. And if I made Shauna the leader of the team and she leads it differently than I would lead it, it doesn't mean that we're going to lose. It simply means it's going to be different. And, and she will find a different path to winning than I might have found. So look, business development and pitching is highly competitive. We want to win. We want to put our five best players on the court. But you also have to recognize that the five leading scorers, you know, might not actually be the five best people for that particular game. We need other talents. We need other abilities that would be more aligned with how we're going to beat that particular team, that particular opponent. And pitch teams have to go the same way. They have to understand that we have to put together the right team for that opportunity, for that decision maker. And let's not worry about our own egos. Let's just craft something that's going to work and going to ultimately turn into a W.
Mm-hmm. And you never know who the decision makers are, you know? So also, Bob, it's the diversity of thought you're talking about, and the what I call the creative abrasion that can happen in really amazing teams. There's this push and pull that creates the 1+1=3. So, you know, you're tending to that and you're trying to differentiate yourself, but, you know, putting Shauna forward may create a whole different dialogue and it may be noticed and there may be an affinity there and an appreciation that you did that on the client side. And that they got to see and learn from Shauna and hear from her, which leads me to another piece. We've been talking a lot about representation in the sales pitch, but the inclusion is how the pitch goes. So if you bring Shauna and she literally, you can have the most senior woman, the most senior person be a woman in the room, but you can have all eyes continue to go to you, Bob. All comments be addressed to you. And so part of the vigilance of inclusion in the moment is noticing the dynamic of who's being spoken to, whose ideas are being fronted, who's being celebrated, and who's the focus. And people that are given kind of the advantage unknowingly because of unconscious bias have to have the presence of mind to say, well, Shauna's the expert. Ask her. This is Shauna's idea. What, and then echoing her ideas, giving her your eye contact, changing like the way your shoulders face. I mean, my favorite story is Obama's cabinet. I mean, there were a couple women who said, we're so tired of being marginalized in this discussion. So we're going to all have each other's back and refer to each other and quote each other and turn towards each other. And we're going to really try to interrupt the biases that happen without even being noticed in so many meetings. And I ask anyone who is not traditionally in these meetings about what happens. And it's incredible how even if you cast the room, as we talk about a lot at Change Force, the behavior in the room, and then whose responsibility is it? Is it Shauna's responsibility to say, that was my idea, or to interrupt constantly to be heard? Or can it be a partnership, Bob, with you to say, you know, I really want to give credit where credit is due, or I want Shauna to give Shauna a chance to elaborate on that. This is her domain. And continuing to kind of refocus folks, because they are going to be unaware of their biases too. As much as we've been talking about how they're going to scrutinize us, they are at the same time, potentially, probably likely going to be unaware of how they kind of give you the floor, Bob. And if they have an affinity with you, and even if they don't, I think we're very conditioned to think that certain people are the authority figures, certain people are the most senior. We all do it. I mean, every time you assume that a doctor is male, I still do it. It's incredible that I've done this work for 20 years and we still just stumble into it. So this is human. If you're human, you're biased. You know, this is very forgivable. But what's, I think, less forgivable is that we aren't aware of it and we don't correct ourselves. And that can be a learning moment for not just us, but everybody around us.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I make it clear to the client that Shauna is the authority here, or Shauna has expertise that matters in this pitch, they're going to accept that. The problem is how the leader of that team goes about establishing the roles of people. So I'll give you, I know we're going to talk about the how-tos before we're off. I want to throw one in right off the bat. You know, a lot of pitch teams, when they begin a major meeting, an interview or a pitch, the team goes around the room and they introduce themselves. And that's pretty common. And that there's an advantage in that because it lets the client hear everybody's voice. So right away, you've got a speaking role, if you will. I've recommended to my clients nearly every time we get involved that the pitch team leader should do all the introductions of the team members. And one of the advantages of that is that they, as the pitch team leader, can grant authority and grant expertise to each of their colleagues. So rather than have Shauna come up and say, well, I'm the expert in this area, that's why I'm here, which may very well be true, it will land differently and perhaps better if I say, I've asked Shauna to be on this team because she's the expert in this area and her perspective is going to matter a whole lot to your success. So just a small tactic like that can create the roles, the authority, and the inclusion that I think we're all trying to establish with these diverse and inclusive teams.
Yeah. It's such a great point. And I hope, you know, the audience, again, as we're talking through this, we're really trying to make sure that we're giving you nuggets that you can consume and then take into your work days and or life and observe. And then as that's part of why we're talking about why is it important and what can we do to raise awareness. And we're going to get into what are some of the, you know, recommendations as we continue the conversation. But again, you know, we're really hoping that these are actionable, that you have actionable takeaways. And so I really appreciate you saying that, Bob, because that happens so often, you know, that everybody goes into the pitch meeting and what's the first thing that happens is that introduction. So again, folks, if you hear that, you know, having the leader grant that authority and that permission and that, you know, helping that potential clients in the room understand how to think about the rest of the team is really important. That's a great one. So Jennifer, when I opened this up, we talked about five key points in the kind of world of why it's important. Did we hit all of them? Because I don't want to shortchange the audience.
Yeah, we've done a bunch of them. I mean, okay. The 5 points, I'll just run them down just to remind everybody. So DEI is an increasingly important, urgent issue for almost anyone you will sit across the table from. They are probably accountable to a degree for having competency and that they don't have. and they're getting pressure from their stakeholders on it. So if you can connect your knowledge of their demographics to your practices, even if you're just early on your journey or you really don't have a lot of a story to tell, I would recommend sales teams get prepared on that and be a part of actually learning what that story is so that you can answer the question and you are prepared. And you might even, when you get comfortable with it, be more proactive in bringing it up as a factor, because that will show that you've really done your homework and you're very, you're thinking about your clients, prospects, business as if it's your own. And that you have common ground in terms of idea sharing, best practice sharing, common struggles, et cetera. There's a lot of opportunity, I think, to build solidarity and support. And I think that's something we don't talk about a lot when we talk about the connective tissue of sales. Often sales teams don't have comfort discussing these things, so get some education. Often companies have modules you can attend. There's tons of learning on LinkedIn. Just sort of the common microaggressions that are faced by women in meetings. We just brought up a couple: eye contact, stealing of ideas, credit taking for ideas, talking over people, airtime. I love there was an app for a while that would measure, after a meeting, measure the proportion of female and male voices. in the room. AI is going to make us very savvy about these things.
It hasn't already. I never knew about that. That's amazing.
I know. So I love it. Putting people forward, Bob, I loved what you said, you know, making sure people, what you're actually doing is you're joining your authority with someone. You're actually using your professional capital and you're sharing your capital with somebody in that moment. You're telling people who somebody is, and you're in a way transferring attention and expertise. And so you're sanctioning someone. You are literally, you're authorizing them. I love it. It's beautiful. And I think then people will follow suit. I think that's absolutely perfect. And remember, some of us are more confident in rooms than others. And so some of us will, you know, dominate conversations if the leader doesn't actually manage for inclusion too. So there may be a star salesperson or someone who's really, you know, extroverted or knows this client or went to the same school, and all of this bonding may be happening. And I think the leader has to be very aware of that, because there are pluses and more minuses these days to that, when there are assumptions being made about like common ground and shared kind of social lives and pursuits and hobbies and interests. Inevitably, that can be read as not inclusive, like jokes, humor, sports, like, you know, sports jokes, like we know all the, maybe we don't know all the things, but this is where I live. So there's a lot of folks, be curious about who has felt their voice hasn't been heard in these meetings. Who did we not notice? Who didn't speak? Who didn't really get the authority that they deserve? Begin to notice that as a leader, because that's actually managing for inclusion. Translating D&I concepts into business language is the third that resonates with teams and leadership. So know the business case. We always talk about the competitive advantage of serving a rapidly diversifying world, the market share you can generate, the greater revenue, who the decision makers are for a client's customers, which is increasingly female, increasingly non-white. As we're seeing generational changes, there's a huge transfer of wealth. I think about financial services a lot. If you are pitching in the same way to the same people, you are going to miss a whole emerging group of buyers and decision makers and not have any sort of common language with them or ability to establish trust, even across difference. Because Bob, I think somebody that identifies as you do could do this very well, but it takes doing your homework and you know, studying and becoming more culturally competent about a lot of identities that you don't carry. And remember, it's not about having all the answers. It's not about perfection. Let's not make perfect the enemy of the good, as we tend to do. We don't want to say anything unless it's perfect, unless it's complete, unless it's something that we should be able to brag about. But I think sharing the journey is hugely impactful, and will actually, the vulnerability of that encourages sharing on the other side. And there could be storytelling in this that can, you know, we talk a lot about storytelling. You both have talked about it. There can be a lot of like interesting ways to make connections that are very personal in this realm. And finally, you know, there's a lot of old school thinking and resistance still. Sales, I wouldn't say sales are like early adopters on the EI, even though they should be, because they're focusing on the external world and they should be really knowledgeable about how that world is changing. But there's still old behavior. There's kind of boys club stuff. There's sales has a certain reputation, I think. So be a different kind of sales team. You know, bring something new. I think you'll be very surprised by how it will resonate and how unexpected and what a pleasant surprise it might be for someone sitting across the table to say, you know, I've never seen them bring those people or have that conversation with us before. I really appreciated that. I really appreciated they did their homework. I really appreciated they paid attention to this. And I felt more connected to them. And that can be the icing on the cake. May not be the cake, but I think it's going to be, if nothing more important, the as time goes on, because remember, Gen Millennials and more Gen Zs are ascending to positions of making decisions, being a part of these things, and you can bet, I can promise, that old behavior is not going to be acceptable to that group. They are looking and they're seeking to see, do you know it? Do you believe it? Are you aware of it? Are you competent? Are you comfortable talking about it? You know, are you speaking our language? Do you mirror our values? And as they ascend into leadership, this is going to become more and more primary.
so important. As you were saying that, I was just thinking about the element that what that signals when you, if an organization is that stereotypic old school, and then they show up differently one time, it signals something big to the people on the other side, that they start representing themselves in a different way. It does start to show, then signal modernization. I would say innovation, although it's not the most innovative thing, but you know, if an organization is very old school, it is a big shift. So I'm really glad that you pointed that out. And because I think sometimes when people talk about it, it can kind of be like a doom and gloom, but there, and because it is hard to make shifts, the I guess part of the joy or in me even having this conversation and us discussing that is there's so much opportunity for change over time, and changing the way that others perceive an organization, changing the success of a team, changing, you know, wins in, you know, losses and into wins. Like really important. I want to kind of backtrack for 1 second on the element of the giving authority, back to what Bob was saying, because something else hit me when you said that not everybody in the room who might be on that pitch team may feel as comfortable as others talking. So on one hand, you might get some people who dominate. At the same time, what hit me is that when a leader grants that authority, I think it also helps that person who is in a represents marginalized community, actually feel better, feel important, feel valued. And I think that's really important for like a leader in that type of a situation. Sometimes those people need a little extra, call it, you know, arms around them or encouragement in those moments, because it hasn't been the norm for them to be there within that pitch. So, you know, again, situationally dependent, but I think it's really important.
I have that same thought, Shauna, when you said that. When I was saying that, I thought I wanted to make that point, because we do need the boost and we do need what I would call the air cover. And when you've been not a part of it forever and or you've been talked over or you've struggled, sometimes you give up. Sometimes you pull to the back. Sometimes you feel imposter syndrome, like you don't belong there. I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen to an extremely talented person because of sort of repeated bias and behavior that causes you to play smaller and not be as brilliant as you are. It's hard to fight your way through all that for years. And you've got to realize as leaders that people around you have probably been fighting through that for a really long time. So to restart that relationship and build someone up and acknowledge that that might have been their experience, but it's not going to be their experience on your team. And that is beautiful. That's exactly the right answer. And people will blossom right in front of your eyes. But it takes that nurturing and protection in a way, and authoritizing to say, you know, what you say matters. It's important. It's critical. And you're going to make us look amazing in this situation. And I know someone on the client side is really going to resonate with you, to Bob's point, like the way we make our points, the way we show our expertise, like it may just do the trick. And we need to pull out all the stops these days.
Jen, you threw out a word quickly that I want to come back to and make a bigger deal out of. And that's the word nurturing. And here's the context in which I would put this. It's absolutely important to grant people the authority, as we've been talking about. But authority without competence is doomed for frustration, if not failure. So if I'm granting someone the authority to speak up on behalf of a point of view or a subject matter expertise or whatever in a pitch, for example, or in a client meeting, it behooves me to support them, to nurture them so that they have the confidence and some skill set around being able to do that. Now, in a lot of cultures, people, and I'm thinking more of women than of men, are brought up not to be assertive or confident in public speaking, in public speaking roles. It may be as simple as they're taught not to speak loudly, so they speak very quietly. Or there may be a bigger gap in terms of the roles that people are expected to play, which may be have been manifested culturally for generations. I can't turn every presenter into a world-class orator, but as Shauna correctly pointed out earlier, that would make them fake anyway. They wouldn't be authentic. But if I'm going to take somebody and honor their experience and embrace the diversity of their thought and put them in front of the client, I owe them some training. I owe them some support so that they can communicate well, so that they can feel good about their participation. Now, a lot of pitch teams will say, well, a pitch is not the right place to do that sort of thing. It's too much at stake. So I don't care. Go figure it out. Get a coach. Do more rehearsing. There's ways of compensating that doesn't require you to take that person off the team or minimize that individual's role in the pitch. Give them the authority, allow them to talk about their expertise, and give them enough support so that they can do it well. I don't expect someone to sound like me, but I do expect someone to have their version of confidence and authority. And it's up to me as their pitch team leader to do what I can to get them to that point for them.
Yeah, such great points. Thank you so much, Bob. And thank you for being an ally. Jennifer and I started this a very hit record talking about you as an ally. And thank you for being an ally. Yeah. So we spent a good deal of time here together, and I want to make sure we get to, some key recommendations. And I'm going to really look to Jennifer, because this is your area. I really want to look to you and Bob, please chime in, and I will as well, as I think of things. And I know we sprinkled some recommendations throughout this. So we may have already hit on some, but it's really important, I feel, for us to, close out for the audience to give them some tangible recommendations.
Yeah. Well, I'll start. And Bob, I'd love to hear your recommendations. I think sales teams should have trainings at their disposal, perhaps required, around whatever it is, customer demographics, buying power, market share, shifts in decision makers, common ways that bias shows up for different communities of people, so that they are aware of what they may be unwittingly participating in, because we have to look at ourselves first, which is hard to do, and then look at the team and then correct the team, Bob. And to your point, coach the team. So doing debriefs and saying, how did that go? Did you feel included? Did you have a sense that you were heard? I thought you did great. The encouragement, the nurturing, but also the sort of the managing of the rest of the team that is used to kind of doing what they do. There's an adjustment on their part too, to make room for different vantage points, different players. So the leader has to kind of somehow pull all that together. So know that for every action, there's a reaction. so never fun being a leader is tricky. Anyway, so training, information, glossaries and FAQs, I might even say, compile that and be ready. Practice, rehearse, Bob, I like that. How will you answer this question? Role-playing, potentially. I would personally prepare. I mean, I know you all do this if you're listening to this, but if you know, who's going to be in that room? What does DEI mean to their company? What have they said about it? What has been in the headlines about them? What are they dealing with an activist investor? Are they getting pushback? Are there some legal issues that are going on? I mean, these are all things that are perhaps cultural in nature, but they are very visible and top of mind for leaders. And for you not to know that all that is going on means that you may really miss something that's very looming very large for them. And companies more and more are getting dragged into, whether they want to or not, a lot of what's going on outside of those four walls, if we say, right?
Absolutely.
So practice, glossaries, simulations, role plays. I think leadership buy-in with the head of sales all the way up the chain. I would always be, as a consultant, I would want to know what's the stance and the philosophy and the attitude towards this topic by the leadership in the function. If you're swimming upstream, you have a head of sales that doesn't care. And that's, if you're in a larger organization, that's very hard, because a lot of this stuff is best driven from the top. because everybody lines up then. Everybody understands that it's actually part of how they are assessed with performance management. So more and more we're seeing measurements that incorporate DEI metrics for sales teams and other functions, whether that's hiring, casting the room, promotion decisions, win, lose, all of these things. It's starting to be looked at through that lens as well. So I would say get ready for that day, but also if you can influence your leadership, if your leadership is lagging behind, to pay attention to this because it's something you're hearing as you pitch. Maybe you can get them on board and help bring them along in their learning process. But maybe if you're lucky enough, you've got a really strong leader who believes wholeheartedly in everything we've been talking about today and is pushing it downwards. I would say partnering across with your clients on different things. So in industries, there's a lot of interesting partnerships and conferences and events and webinars and education that you can actually share with each other to say, oh, by the way, we are hosting an event on women in oil and gas, and we'd love to invite you and highlight some of your leaders. All of these things are the intangibles that show you're thinking about it, show you're doing the work. Connect your worlds, which is exactly, I think, part of why decisions are made, and allow you to collaborate outside of the sales and the pitch meeting on other things, which I think builds a lot of goodwill and visibility into a culture, which then you can use in the process. I would say to sales teams and most teams in general, lean on the DEI or HR team for a lot of this. So success will look like teams taking this on themselves. Yes. And not being passive or sort of receiving, but really driving the conversation. So if we can get to that place, because there's usually only the D&I teams, if you are lucky to have one, which you may not, if you're listening to this, if you're a small and medium-sized business, they're going to be very stretched thin. And so a lot of this is going to need to originate with you. But I think that's actually a better answer in a way, because the work you do is going to be your work and it's going to transform you. And what you are transforming is yourself into an effective sales leader for the future world. Maybe not the past, but certainly the future. You're literally future-proofing yourself. So whenever I see that people are very reliant or overly reliant on the D&I team or the HR team, I think to myself, they're not quite where they need to be. And gathering feedback. I mean, I would be very, very insistent that you understand why you didn't win or why you did win. Or why you're on hold, or do you have any feedback for us because we're trying to get better on this host of issues, and one of them is representation in our meetings. One of them is the way that we talk about the story at our company about what DEI means to us. Would you give us any feedback on that? What would you have liked to have heard about? What is important to you on this topic? What would you be measuring? What are you looking for in a vendor and a supplier partner? Those are excellent questions and give you a lot of data about how you need to adjust and grow. And believe me, if you can get that information and take it back to your leadership, then you're having a real conversation about pain points that I think is really going to resonate. So often we can't get that feedback, but I think we don't ask. We ask, oh, why do we not get picked? But I don't think we get specific enough about what role all of this that we've been talking about plays.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. And as you're saying it, the thought came to me of fear. Sometimes I think there's a fear in asking that because there's a fear of what the answer is or what do we do about that.
It's not going to be good.
Right. But it also made me think when you were talking, because I think we were saying this earlier, maybe it was an email exchange we had about, it's not just the department, like HR's department or DE&I department. It is every person who is sitting in a seat of leadership within an organization has a responsibility to take this seriously. And I loved how you talked about, like, that's how you are a leader of the future. That is how you know, otherwise you're moving backwards. So, you know, and in saying that, I'm just putting an exclamation on, it takes courage, which is the opposite of what I was saying a minute ago. People sometimes don't ask for the specificity because they're afraid. Mm-hmm. But what this is saying is, like, folks listening, like all of us, let's have courage. Let's be brave in the way that we lead people, lead ourselves, the way we're operating, the way we're showing up in rooms and being present for that potential client in a way that may be different than we've done it before, maybe pushing us to operate differently. But this is the way, and you talked about it earlier, the changing demographics of the world this is the future. So, you know, we really need to, you know, have the courage to do it and not look to somebody else that it's their responsibility.
Right.
Bob, you want to have, is there any recommendations that you have? You've provided some great ones throughout this conversation, but I want to make sure before I close it out here, that I pause and ask for anything else from you.
Well, thank you. Actually, Jennifer Brown should have the last word on this because she literally wrote the book, the books on DEI. And I encourage our listeners and viewers to connect with Jennifer on LinkedIn and check out her work. It's just fabulous. But I cannot help myself, so I will throw in a point. And it's just an amplification of something Jennifer said among many excellent recommendations. But here's the amplification I want to make. Don't do work around diversity and inclusion in your sales team because we said so. Do it because it's going to help you win more new business. Now, the way you're going to know that, and Jennifer did mention this, is by doing that deep analysis of the decision makers and the influencers that you're going to be pitching to. What's important to them? Even though there's not going to be in the room the director of DEI, I mean, this is a whole different conversation to have around why that role doesn't even exist like it used to. But just because it's not in the RFP, or there isn't somebody in the room who has that responsibility, doesn't mean it's not important. Doesn't mean that D&I is not a way that the decision makers are actually being evaluated in their own company, which means that it's a factor in their decision around which provider to hire for a project or for an opportunity. So if you do your homework thoroughly about each decision maker and influencer, then it'll be apparent to you what their points of view are on diversity and inclusion, and it will guide you to be more confident in the adjustments that you're going to make and to be certain that those adjustments are executed effectively. It's about winning. It's about winning as a company. It's about winning as a team. It's about having individuals who feel like they're winning as well. And you, as the leader of a new business team, a business development team, have the opportunity to create victories all over the place. Be smart about it. You'll get those wins, and it will elevate everybody's status, everybody's confidence, everybody's abilities throughout your team and throughout your organization and in your client organization as well.
Nice. Well, I feel obligated. Jennifer, do you want to close us out with any final words? You are the expert on this space, as Bob so nicely said.
I just want to say, like, Bob just role modeled Shauna a lot of what we've been talking about.
Yeah, he did. That's right.
It was really please pay attention to what he just did. And if you missed it, go back and listen. But just the acknowledgement, the authority giving, the echoing, the building up of expertise that you just did, Bob. It's so natural to you, but you know, this is why you do what you do. But it really deputizes me. It makes me feel just in the moment on a personal level that I matter to the deal, that I have something important to share, that that I belong there. And belonging it's not an accident. The belonging has become how we talk about DEI, actually. And a lot of companies are adding the B But the belonging piece is a culmination of the D and the I and all those other things being present and practiced. It is that kind of result of, I feel good here. I want to stay here. I can thrive here. I can be myself and do things in my way. To your point, Bob, about how Shauna might articulate something differently that might just strike a chord with somebody, that comes from not just what we've learned and gone to school for and our expertise, but it comes from who we are. There's wisdom in who we are. And there's wisdom in our ability to read the room and notice power dynamics and pick up on something that somebody says. And we need all the eyeballs and all the ears on that so that we don't leave any stone unturned in a sales interaction. So, but that was just beautiful the way you did it. And I appreciate it. And I want to say yesterday was International Allyship Day. And what we call an ally is somebody who pays a lot of attention to who has the power? Is the power being shared? What voices are being elevated, but were traditionally not heard? How can I be a part of putting forward and using my platform or sort of calling to account the carpet somebody and something that wasn't equitable? And I know, Bob, that you would do that. And to go into a meeting knowing that somebody has your back like that
game-changing
allows you to really shine. So as you think about your role as a leader and you're listening to this, your success is everyone's success. And Bob, you just articulated there's a lot of different kinds of wins. There's a lot, and there's a win. You might have lost the business, but you might have created a whole new atmosphere for someone to perform at their best. And you never know, that could be unstoppable in terms of their potential to thrive in the future and sell more business. So thank you for what you just did.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you, Shauna, for having
us. Thank you both so much. It's been an absolute pleasure and honor. And this is a topic that is just so authentic to what I believe in, and things such as me starting this show and my friend Scott Hallman calls it a bit of a crusade that I've been on related to leadership. So again, thank you so much. And listeners, thank you so much for making the time to listen to this. Hopefully you really get to take a lot out of this and you see what we mean when we're talking about breaking down the importance of DEI in business development. So please take things that you've heard from this and start to put them into practice. And please reach out to us. You can find all of us on LinkedIn. Jennifer Brown, again, this is her area of expertise. She has plenty of books in the space. I'll tag and include some links in that. But everyone have an amazing day. Thank you so much and be a part of the change. Thank you.
Thank you, Shauna.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks, Shauna.